This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we remember the Alamo. In the news roundup, we'll hear about sham hearings, phony report cards, tweeting judges, and insurgent Democrats. We've also got an interview and a commentary focusing on the tax reform efforts going on in Congress. Welcome back to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, and I guess welcome myself back here to the 1836 studios. Glad to be back in the States, back in the Lone Star State after an extended honeymoon. Thank you to Carrie Cheshire for filling in for us. Before we start the program this week, I wanted to pull in our producer, Buddy Kipp. Buddy, you've been having a busy week this week, taking kind of the 1836 show on the road to the Alamo to sit down. We had Michael Quinn Sullivan of Empire Texans interviewing Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush at the Alamo. So how did that event go?
It went great. We had an amazing opportunity to film a Facebook Live interview with the Land Commissioner. And right there on the grounds at the Alamo, the commissioner and his entire staff were very welcoming, and they're really eager to sit down and talk with us.
Yeah, it was kind of a neat opportunity. Again, this interview is up at Facebook, Empower Texans Facebook page. We have a Facebook Live there, about 30-minute interview with Michael Quinn Sullivan and George P. Bush, talking about the issue of reimagine the Alamo. This is something that's given me a bit of heartburn, given a lot of grassroots, a lot of concern, but a project being sponsored by the Land Commission, by the General Land Office, to do a lot of important updates and restoration work at the Alamo, but then there are a lot of concerns about, are they going to try and whitewash the history? Are they going to try and write it out? There was a thought at one point that they might try and, you know, basically change the name of the Alamo, call it by its old mission name, Mission Valero. So I think it was good to see the interview. I feel like some of those concerns were dealt with in the interview. Do you agree?
Yeah, at one point he did say that their biggest concern was kind of reclaiming the battleground at the Alamo, and you know, I know that was a big concern with a lot of people of, you know, exactly what is this going to be?
Yeah, and y'all were there. I mean, you're right there in front of the Alamo, and so you're, you know, on one side you have the most important landmark to probably any Texan, and on the other side you have
Ripley's Believe It or Not,
the carnival, the circus, kind of noisy kind of contraptions going on. And so there are elements to that project that are good, you know, the restoration work, but also some concerns. I kind of came away from it listening to the interview thinking, Commissioner Bush is giving some good answers about some very important issues here, but probably not concrete enough. You know, on the one hand, he wants to say, I'm the boss, you know, I'm the boss, and you can trust me. The 1836 battle will stay the centerpiece. No, the UN isn't going to come in and take over things, you know, all these concerns that people have had. But really where I felt concerned was Michael's questions about the cenotaph. And Commissioner Bush, you know, thankfully kind of backtracking a bit and saying, hey, if I had a magic wand, I don't want to see it moved. But it's like, hey, you know, you said earlier you're the boss, right? You either have the magic wand of being the guy who's in charge, or you don't. And I think he's going to have to be more clear as we move forward. I don't know. Do you agree?
No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a great interview. Listeners can go on to the Empower Texans Facebook page and see that Facebook Live. Again, where all can people find it?
You can see any of the videos we do on Facebook Live at www.facebook.com/EmpowerTexans and just click on the videos tab and all of them are right there.
Well, thanks for your work on that. Thanks for your work on that, buddy.
All right, no problem.
All right, now let's get started with the news roundup for this week. For that, we turn to Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Carrie, good to have you on the program. Thanks for guest hosting while I was gone.
Appreciate it, Tony. I always enjoy the opportunity to be here in 1836 Studios.
Yeah, I wanted to have you on this week to talk about a couple of stories, one at the state legislative level and another story developing in Washington, D.C. First, let's talk about what's going on in Austin. This week on Wednesday, there was a Economic Competitiveness Committee hearing, and conservatives are saying, hey, this thing is a sham. You know, it's a lame duck sham hearing. What are they talking about?
Sure, Tony. So this is a hearing called by House Speaker Joe Strauss, who's already announced that he's not coming back to the Texas legislature next session, and really headed up by his hatchet man, State Affairs Chairman Byron Cook, who's also announced that he's not coming back next session. Neither one wanted to put their record before voters. And as you mentioned,
couple
it really
of lame
is a
ducks.
A lame ducks is absolutely right. It really is a sham hearing. You know, when you talk about economic competitiveness, most Texans think of, oh, okay, well, are they talking about cutting regulations? Are they talking about cutting taxes? Are they talking about making it easier for businesses to operate, allowing them to have more freedom here in the state of Texas? Well, that's not what this hearing was. What this hearing was an opportunity for a whole bunch of liberal Republicans and their Democrat allies to score political talking points against their political enemies.
Yeah, and so we have a couple of guys here, you know, very liberal Republicans. A lot of Republican activists would say these guys are rhinos. The Republicans in name, and they're not Republican, not conservative. And they're leaving the legislature because they're really kind of out of touch with voters. But they're having this hearing, and yeah, they're basically putting the blame on conservative policies and saying, hey, we're a Republican, we're pro-business, but all these conservative policies like religious freedom and protecting the privacy of young girls, all these things that conservatives want to do, protecting us from illegal aliens, you know, that's really bad for business. That's the worst thing ever. That's what this hearing was all about.
That's right, Tony. It's absolutely absurd. You had a parade of people come in and say things like Texas's ban on sanctuary cities is anti-business, as if enforcing the existing immigration laws and working with the federal government in order to do that is somehow anti-business. Just absolutely absurd. And then you had them, as you mentioned, just turn it into attack on the family, into an attack on Republican conservative primary voters who have said that we needed common sense legislation to protect privacy and intimate spaces. You know, the Privacy Act, which was killed in the Texas legislature by these liberal Republicans and their Democrat allies, was a pro-business bill that actually protected their freedom, that said no city, no county, no state can tell you what you do in your business as in regard to bathroom policies. If you want to have a men's restroom and a women's restroom, it's great. If you want to have two gender-neutral bathrooms, great. It's your decision. You have the right as a business owner.
And the customer's decision of whether they go to the business, a la Target, you know, who's suffered so much. It's a bad business decision, but it's their business decision to make. It's a pro-business thing. I thought it was really kind of, maybe ironic is the right word, or ironic isn't the right word, but it was interesting that these same representatives who are unwilling to test their records before the voters, you know, they're running, fleeing from the voters, also didn't want to have public input at this hearing. They didn't want to allow, they broke with the protocol in the House by not allowing other representatives to participate in the hearing. So you had actually State Representative Matt Rinaldi out of Dallas County come out and say, hey, I asked to be able to ask questions. They said, no, you can't participate and can't ask questions. I thought that was really, really interesting. Tell us a little bit about what was going on there.
Right, Tony. You know, it's really interesting that if you were a regular Texan, a regular business owner, you were not allowed to come speak at this meeting. It was invited testimony only. And so it was only people who were going to support their agenda. Liberal Democrats like Mark Cuban and other liberal business owners all here across the state, and more importantly, not business owners, but, you know, the vice president of diversity at some business coming in to testify,
right,
you know, on some corporate dime. And then, as you mentioned, they stopped Matt Rinaldi from going on the panel here in Texas in the Texas legislature. Whenever there are committee hearings, it's common courtesy to allow other lawmakers the right to sit on the panel and ask questions. And even if you're not going to do that, to come and testify before the committee and give their perspective. And neither of that was allowed with Matt Rinaldi. Neither of that was allowed with his colleague, Matt Krause. And it's probably because they know that Matt Rinaldi is too smart to allow them to get away with what they want to get away with.
He was going to inject some truth into their show hearing, and so they had to shut him down. And it really just belies that the whole thing is a mockery and a sham. Kind of interesting, related to this, Texas Association of Business, one of the groups that you know, people think, oh, that's a Republican pro-business group, that really kind of been co-opted and controlled by the radical LGBT movement, came out with their index this week. They're praising Democrats, saying that's the quintessential pro-business candidate is Democrats.
Absolutely right, Tony. You know, TAB, or as I call them, GLBTAB, because they've gotten over $100,000 from leftists committed to advancing a far-left view of GLBT rights. You know, they're coming out with an index that punishes conservative Republicans, punishes mainstream Republicans, while at the same time praising Democrats. You've got two conservative state lawmakers, State Senator Bob Hall out of Edgewood and State Senator Connie Burton out of Colleyville, both with great records of, you know, voting against the franchise tax, voting to cut regulations here in Texas, voting for property tax reform. Both of them have Fs on this new GLBTAB scorecard. Meanwhile, Democrats score high marks. The same Democrats who, by the way, are championing things like a state income tax, yeah, like more spending. It's just absolutely insane.
Literally, the only 100 on this TAB index is a Democrat, Oscar Longoria, and then you have Republicans scoring in the 40s and 50s. They'll leave out votes like the pro-business, anti-tax votes, and then include, you know, hey, we'll punish you if you're for sanctuary, you know, for the sanctuary cities bill and things like that. So crazy. I'd be remiss if we're going to mention an index if we didn't plug quickly the Empower Texans, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility Index. Tell people where they can learn about that.
Sure. So if you aren't looking for an index that's been cherry-picked to score political talking points, check out our index, the Fiscal Responsibility Index, at index.empowertexans.com. We look at every vote, and we include those that we think deal with tax and budget issues, as well as limited government issues. And we provide them all there so that you, the taxpayer, can make an informed decision about your state lawmaker. You can look us up and see our stance on a bill, how your lawmaker voted, and then if you agree. If you agree with us, great. Contact your lawmaker and let them know. If you disagree with us, great. Contact your lawmaker and let them know.
Yeah, I think that's a great tool. Let's switch gears, talk about Washington real quick. We've been covering the appointment of Justice Don Willett to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is the federal court of appeals in New Orleans that has jurisdiction over Texas. Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Willett, the tweeting judge, everybody's kind of favorite judicial character on Twitter, up for his confirmation hearings on Wednesday. How did that go?
Well, it kind of went as you'd expect, Tony. You know, if you had a conservative Republican jurist who had conservative opinions and he was walking into a committee that, you know, had a large number of liberal Democrats on it, they'd probably have some criticisms. What you might not expect is for them to criticize him over supporting bacon. You might not expect them to criticize him for a joke he made about the Death Star. But we saw both of those happen in the U.S. Senate on Wednesday.
Yeah,
absolutely absurd.
I think these guys might have been wanting to get on the news and trying to soak up a little bit of media coverage with their bacon questions. I thought it was so funny. You know, of all the topics, important topics, yeah, there's important topics worth discussing with Justice Willett, his judicial philosophy, those sort of things. We have Democrats coming in asking him about bacon. So anyway, something to read about at EmpowerTexans.com. Thanks, Kerry, for coming on and giving us an update about these stories.
Appreciate it, Tony.
All right, now let's turn to Reagan Reed with the Houston Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Reagan, you've got kind of a disappointing story, but an important story, a story that has some lessons in it for Texans, of something that went on there in the Woodlands, where a conservative champion on the Woodland City Council was unseated by a local Democrat. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
Absolutely. Well, it's a very interesting story because Montgomery County typically votes about 80% Republican, and this represents the first instance where an open Democrat has unseated a Republican in a local election like this. And what we had is Laura Fio, who's the Republican incumbent, very conservative, and defending her seat against Carol Stromat, who was a very liberal Democrat, former head of the local Democrats club and a Democrat precinct chair. And I think one of the major takeaways from this is that we have to be constantly on our guard because I think a lot of people assume Laura's going to win. This is a Republican area. And so she didn't necessarily get her campaign off the ground until later.
Yeah.
Whereas Democrats.
You have Republicans kind of taking it for granted. Hey, I'm in a really Republican area. She gets kind of a really slow start to her campaign. But the Democrats aren't taking it for granted at all. They know that they don't expect to win, but they're fighting to win the races. And they're out there working for months on end before the election.
Absolutely. They were very well organized. They got their people to polls. And, you know, I would suspect that they're coming back. So we need to be on our guard.
Yeah. One of the elements in this story is not just that the Democrats were organized and, I guess, doing their job, but there were elements in the Republican Party who switched over to go vote for the Democrat because they didn't like a conservative Republican in the seat.
That was really disappointing. The Republican establishment, Chamber of Commerce crowd really had it out for Laura Feo, because to get her seat, she had unseated a very establishment, moderate Republican in the last election. And so a lot of that crowd saw this as their revenge. And so you had a former establishment board member, had a yard sign for the Democrat in his yard. There were other people in the Republican establishment that were openly supporting the Democrat. And the Republican Party itself, despite numerous calls for help from precinct chairs and activists, they decided to do absolutely nothing. And the party itself sat this one out, and basically because they would rather have a Democrat win than a staunch conservative who was not part of the good old boy system.
And that's, you see the result. And I think the lesson for Texans out there is, I don't know, we can't take these things for granted. We need to be on our toes. The Democrats are organizing, and you can't count on Republican establishment apparatuses necessarily to come to your assistance. So we've got to be working hard. I think that's really the lesson here, isn't it, right?
Absolutely. The Democrats are organizing, and they're going to take advantage of these nonpartisan races in order, the school board, city councils, and others, in order to slip their people in, and they can do just as much damage at the local level as they could at the state or national level.
That's right. Well, thank you for that report, Reagan.
Thank you.
Next up, after the break, we've got an interview about the tax reform efforts going on in Congress. Earlier this week, Carrie Cheshire sat down with Congressman Kevin Brady to discuss his efforts to fix the tax code.
More than ever, the people of Texas are making their voices heard, reclaiming their rightful spot as the true leaders in our republic. It's in that spirit that Empower Texans gathers each year with our friends and supporters from across the state, and I hope you will consider joining that party. Our Conservative Leaders Gala is a time for fun, fellowship, encouragement, and celebration, an opportunity to recognize just how far citizens have come. The 5th annual Conservative Leaders Gala will be held in Irving, Texas at the Irving Convention Center on December 2nd. For more information, to purchase tickets, or to find out about sponsorship opportunities, visit empowertexans.com/events. If you believe citizens are the real leaders in Texas, this will be an event you won't want to miss.
All right, well, welcome back to Texas Scorecard Radio. Today we're joined by Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady, who represents Texas's 8th Congressional District, which stretches all the way from the Woodlands up to Huntsville, up to Lake Livingston. Congressman Brady, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Kerry. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to be with you. So I know there's a lot of moving parts in tax reform. Can you kind of let us know what the most recent current House bill is and how this will affect Texans?
Yeah, so this is, as you know, a once-in-a-generation opportunity to fix this broken tax code. Not only lower tax rates on families, simplify this code so much so that 9 out of 10 Americans will be able to file using a simple postcard-style system. But it also means, you know, redesigning the code so our local businesses can compete and win anywhere in the world, including here at home, and eliminating a lot of the loopholes and special deductions and special interest provisions so that people can keep more of what they earn. The good news is that this tax reform plan has passed the Ways and Means Committee last week. It is coming to the House floor this week. And so we're seeing, for Americans, the first action in over 30 years to get this tax code fixed.
Right, and I know you mentioned, you know, kind of keeping the U.S. tax code competitive. I know I was looking the other day, the United States has one of the highest corporate tax rates in the developed world. Why is it important for us to cut the corporate tax rate?
Yeah, the importance is this. We're losing our jobs in our businesses, our research, our manufacturing overseas, because as you've said, we're now nearly dead last among our global competitors like China, Europe, Mexico, and Canada. In fact, we're 31st out of 35 and still falling. And so our goal in tax reform is to leapfrog America from 31st in the world in competitiveness into the top three, the lead pack, and keep us there. And what that means is not just simply more jobs and higher paychecks here at home. It means bringing back jobs from around the world back to Texas, for example. We are one of the top, well, we are the top exporting state in the nation. No one sells or ships more around the world than we do. But we have our businesses compete with one hand tied behind their back. So we unleash that competitiveness. We do things like not just cutting the rate for businesses, for the first time in history, we allow businesses to immediately write off all of their new investment in plants, equipment, software, and technology. First time ever, which is going to unleash job creation along Main Street in a way, frankly, we just haven't seen in too long.
Right. So kind of talk a little bit. I know there's this debate in Washington on whether tax reform has to be kind of, quote, revenue neutral and what that means. Shouldn't taxpayers want kind of this tax cut not to be revenue neutral, but actually really cut government so then y'all can come back and cut spending?
You want to cut taxes so people can keep more of what they earn. You want to cut taxes so that our local businesses can compete and win. And you want to cut taxes so you can grow the economy. That's what this is focused on. We saw this after President Reagan's reforms. We saw it after President Kennedy's tax cuts as well. We saw the economy boom. And so when we do that, that helps move us toward a balanced budget, which I think tax reform should. Growth, you know, just even modest economic growth from the last 10 years recoups the $1.5 trillion in a fairly short timetable. But more importantly than that, growth plus eliminating a lot of these special interest deductions and loopholes, just closing them, that also moves us to a balanced budget. You've got to do both.
Right. Well, kind of speaking of loopholes, one of the biggest debates has been the so-called SALT, the state and local tax deduction, which is kind of basically a blue state subsidy program where high tax states like New York and California get a break from the federal government, whereas, you know, kind of low tax and good fiscally managed, relatively, Texas kind of ends up paying for that. Can you talk about how that debate's been going on in Congress?
Yeah. So it's been, Carrie, as you know, it's been a major debate in Washington, and here are our choices. We can stay with the current tax code where everyone in America has a higher tax rate so that some can write off their state and local taxes. And while doing that, basically everyone subsidizes each other. Rural communities subsidize cities. Middle income subsidize higher income. Low tax states subsidize high tax states. So, or we can do a different approach which says, rather than that, why don't we lower tax rates for everybody and you just pay your own. So for the first time, Washington doesn't reward or punish you depending on where you live and work. It is a different approach than what's been in the tax code for too long, but I think there's a fairness, a simplicity, and for the first time, Washington won't encourage local governments to keep raising their taxes. And I think long-term, that's really good for families in these high-tax states.
Right. Well, once again, this is Texas Scorecard Radio, joined by Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady. Congressman Brady, tell us a little bit about how it's going in the House. I think you mentioned earlier that y'all were planning to pass it out relatively quickly. I know in the Senate, they're already talking about moving the goalposts and talking about as soon as New Year's Day. President Donald Trump and all kind of taxpayers thought that this would be done by Thanksgiving. Is the Republican-controlled legislative branch going to get this done?
The answer is yes. And in the House, we set our goal of moving it through the out of the House by Thanksgiving and to the Senate floor shortly afterwards. Our goal from day one has been to finish this by the end of the year. We're on the timetable to do that. And I think, Carrie, one of the key things, the reason we're able to move and act after three decades, is early on we sat down with President Trump in the Senate and said, let's focus on one tax reform plan, not three, not five, not 10. Let's put together a unified approach, which we did. And so as a result, the House and Senate are both shooting at the same target. Are there some differences? Sure. But there's a lot more common ground. And so because we did that work with President Trump early on, that's why I'm confident we can get this to the president's desk before the end of the year.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Brady. I know that you've got a lot going on in Washington with, you know, a lot of moving pieces here on this tax reform plan. Appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
You too.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Last but not least, we'll stick with tax reform for this week's commentary. Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us why Texans should stop subsidizing high-tax states like California and New York.
Texans shouldn't be subsidizing people who live in high-tax blue states. If voters there want big government, let them pay for it. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. President Donald Trump has pushed the Republican Congress to deliver on long overdue tax reform. And unlike the Obamacare repeal debacle, the House and Senate are taking action. Both chambers are working to vastly simplify taxes. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Kevin Brady of Texas, has said he wants Americans to be able to file their taxes on a postcard-sized form. Proposals in both chambers would reduce the corporate tax rate, making the U.S. competitive once again on the international market. For years, American tax policy has given perverse incentives for businesses to move money and jobs overseas. Simplified taxes and reduced tax burdens will go a long way in making America more competitive and Americans more free. But just like the perverse incentives for businesses to go overseas, federal tax policy for years has made it easier for states to increase taxes and to subsidize Americans who live in those high-tax blue states. Here's how it's worked. Federal law lets people deduct from their federal tax burden the amount of state and local taxes they pay. People who live in lower tax states therefore have a smaller deduction relative to the people who live in high tax blue states. In turn, that means taxpayers in low tax states are subsidizing those who choose to live in higher tax states by picking up a bigger share of the federal tax burden. Look, if someone wants to live in California, New York, good for them. But you shouldn't have to subsidize it. Those who want to elect grow-government liberals should bear the burden, not those who live elsewhere. The federal tax subsidy for people living in high-tax blue states is significant. Billions of dollars essentially flow each year from lower-tax states to reduce the pain of living in high-tax, big-government blue states. With Congress looking to end the deductibility of state and local taxes, those high-tax states are howling. Like petulant children demanding that other people be required to pay for their candy, politicians in California, New York, and elsewhere are screaming about how unfair it is that their citizens will have to pay for. It's widely reported that just two states, California and New York, make up 32% of the state and local tax deductions. And, no surprise, those states have among the highest state and local taxes. The New York Times recently reported that Nancy Pelosi is upset that taxpayers in her California district will pay higher taxes. She's described the effects of repealing the deduction as, quote, devastating, unquote, for taxpayers in her district. Yes, Nancy, that is exactly the point. Your liberal pals in California keep growing government with the approval of the voters, but taxpayers around the country have been sheltering them from the true cost. It's time Nancy Pelosi and her fellow Californians finally carried the full cost of their liberal state and local governments. And of course, that's ultimately what has Democrats in blue states in such a tizzy. They fear what will happen when voters feel the full weight of their electoral choices pressing against their wallets. As it is, the tax and regulatory burden in blue states have already strained their economies to the breaking point, with job producers fleeing in droves over the last two decades to lower tax states. If the people of Illinois, California, Vermont, or New York want big government and high taxes, then they're welcome to it. And the consequences. But no matter what, the federal tax code shouldn't force Texans to subsidize them. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I've got for you this week. Make sure to go to Empower Texans on Facebook and check out that interview with Michael Quinn Sullivan and Commissioner George P. Bush that Buddy and I mentioned at the top of the program. And until next week, check out all the reporting we put out at TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.